This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Author, journalist, professor, and editor Dawn Raffel must be drawn to the quirky side of history. In her book, The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, she illustrates how what most of us see of the past and refer to as history is just a glimpse of what actually took place and lies beneath the surface, the proverbial tip of the iceberg. Her book examines the early 1900s intersection of boardwalk carnivals, neonatal care, and entrepreneurship by telling the factual story of how Dr. Martin Cooney saved thousands of preemie babies in his incubator sideshows between 1898 and 1943. Dawn Raffel, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you.
Wonderful to have you. Well, goodness, what a fascinating, strange, and wonderful story. Why have we never heard the story before of how Dr. Martin Cooney puts babies in incubators alongside sword swallowers at various expositions and world fairs?
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Martin Cooney was famous during his lifetime, but, you know, sometimes stories from the past tend to fade. And I was doing a little research on the Chicago World's Fair in 1933, and I saw a photo of this incubator sideshow, and I just thought, what on earth was that? That's the strangest thing I've ever seen. And then when I realized he was on Coney Island in Atlantic City for 40 years permanently, I thought that just does it. But another piece of this story is that nobody had really gotten to the bottom of who this man really was. And so that was what became my job for 4 years while I was writing this book.
Wow. Well, I can't wait to hear more about him. And I suppose you won't reveal to us in this interview what the ultimate secret is of the book. And I can't wait to find out what it is. But in the meantime, let's start here with back in those times and even into the 1950s, as I understand, preemie babies were basically just put aside to die, essentially.
Well, that is a little bit unfair to the medical establishment. There certainly were doctors all along who were doing their best to help premature babies. It's simply that, you know, American hospitals didn't have the resources. They didn't have the equipment. They didn't have the personnel. Those hospitals, honestly, were not always the cleanest places. They weren't able to care for these kinds of tiny preemies who Martin Cooney was treating. You also really, sadly, had a eugenics movement in this country, which just created an environment that was hostile to anybody who needed some extra help. So eugenics did not specifically target preemies, but it did target newborns with disabilities, and some preemies would have disabilities. So there wasn't an emphasis on it. By the end of World War II, there really were incubators in American hospitals, and there was pretty comprehensive care for preemies. The problem then was that the babies were going blind. Yes, because they, unfortunately, they had too much oxygen in those incubators.
And Dawn, how is it that Dr. Cooney came by having these incubators? Was it that there was the capitalism? Was he able to harness the power of capitalism to create the needed resources, financial resources, to put together incubators? Or was he borrowing from the medical industry where they already existed? I'm just kind of wondering about the origins of the incubator and how it ended up in these boardwalk sideshows as opposed to hospitals.
Oh, that is such a great way of stating it, is that, it was capitalism. So the incubator, as we know it, was invented in France in the late 1900s. It was invented by an engineer. And this man decided to show off his fantastic new piece of equipment by putting babies in them and showing to the public how these babies could be saved. He was at an exhibition in Berlin, and this captured the public imagination. So immediately showmen started seeing, oh, if this machine is so good, it's almost automatic, which is how it was built, let's do it as a sideshow. So you had Bailey of Barnum & Bailey had an incubator show in London. You had the London Royal Aquarium. Pretty soon the showmen realized this is a pain in the neck. This is not a toaster oven. It's really, really hard work to keep a preemie alive. And it was Cooney who stayed with it. So doctors had a smattering of incubators here and there in hospitals. But unfortunately, they weren't getting good results because they honestly, they didn't have the personnel and the skilled nurses and the resourcing to get good results from them.
Well, and then so the obvious next question is, you know, Martin Cooney was able to save between 6,500 and 7,000 babies. I mean, that's not like saving a baby here or there. That's a pretty massive undertaking, which I would imagine, as you just pointed out, I mean, there's a lot more to it than a toaster oven. So how was he able to put together the necessary infrastructure, not only the incubators, but the other parts of the infrastructure to support and save that many babies?
The secret sauce was he had very, very highly skilled nurses, and he had a lot of nurses for the number of patients he had. So one of his nurses had been trained in Paris, which was where the premier care was going on at the time. His wife was an RN, and these nurses knew how to feed preemies, which is very difficult. He insisted on breast milk only, one tiny, tiny micro drop at a time. They could nasally feed these children because they had no tubes or anything like that. But, you know, these little babies don't even have a swallowing mechanism. He insisted on loving touch, and he must have just known that somehow intuitively. And the premises were immaculate. So a doctor at the time was quoted as saying he'd never seen a hospital that was as clean as that sideshow. So he was able to provide the highest level of care that you could get anywhere. You could be a millionaire and you couldn't buy better care than he was able to give you in the sideshow.
It seems so strange that you could have an immaculate, germ-free, bacteria-free environment at a sideshow at Coney Island or at Atlantic City or at some of the world's fairs. How did he manage that?
All that I heard from, you know, the tapes of people who had seen it was that everything was cleaned up immediately. They weren't outside. They weren't open air. So you would walk into something that was like a mini neonatal intensive care building.
Uh-huh. Wow. So there are secrets that Dr. Cooney carried with him from France. Some say, some question whether or not he was a doctor, some question where he was even born. It seemed as though there was lore around Dr. Martin Cooney. Why was that so? Was it just the way he twisted the stories to, you know, ultimately sell his sideshow?
There was lore around Dr. Cooney because he created it. He was a showman, as they say, from Mazard to Gizzard. So it's honestly at this point not even a spoiler to say that the European credentials he was claiming were not real. But he did understand and read enough to know what was being done in Europe. So he was such an interesting person. He also was getting very rich doing this. And, you know, I don't think he saw a conflict between altruism and his own self-interest.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, our guest is Dawn Raffel. She's written a fascinating book called The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies. And yes, Dawn, as you say, he had such a great interest in saving these babies. I mean, that became sort of forefront on his mind of what he really wanted to do. Granted, as you say, it was making him a lot of money, but this is what he loved. Why did he love it so?
He was a guy who just loved life, for starters. He came from a family of doctors, so I think somehow that was in his psychological makeup. And I think he, you know, as soon as you begin to care for anything, even if you're caring for a houseplant, if you're caring for a pet, you begin to have feelings for it. And so he was caring for these babies, and I think he really loved them. He understood that he had the means to save these children, and that nobody else was going to do it. And I think for him, that really was the bottom line. And over time, he would get invitations to high school graduations. He would get invitations to weddings. You know, these kids would come back to him who had been told, you know, their parents had been told, it's hopeless. And, you know, here they were alive and well. And he loved it.
Don, I'm curious about what drew the audience to see these preemie babies in incubators in these sideshows. And I'm just trying to put myself in that position. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but it doesn't seem like it would be all that particularly interesting. Of course, you know, the early 1900s and boardwalks and all the showmanship that was going on there was a different time and a different era. But could you sort of walk us through what an audience or a person, a citizen walking down the boardwalk, how they'd be drawn in, what they would see when they went inside? Were there numerous incubators? And what do you think the appeal was for those people?
Okay, so first of all, on the boardwalk, you were going to hear a barker. And the barker was going to say, you know, step right in, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget to see the babies. Maybe the future president is inside. And you would go in and you would see maybe a dozen, 15 incubators along the walls. There would be a lecturer. And back then, people had no idea that babies this small could live. So they had never seen a human being that weighed 2 pounds. In the very early days, he had a problem with, you know, people trying to stick their finger into the machine because they thought, oh, these babies must be wax. There were still people saying they can't possibly be real babies. The idea that a child could be that small and could be alive was just unheard of. And it was billed as something educational. You know, and again, you had, it's kind of hard to conceive of the whole environment because you had, you know, people who had disabilities were out there as freak shows, you know, but this was billed as sort of an educational exhibit. There were people who would come every week like this was a reality show. They'd have a favorite baby that they'd be rooting for.
And then another kind of odd perspective on it, but I'm curious about how the parents felt of these babies. I mean, I saw, you know, the hospitals would pass on their preemies to Dr. Cooney, and it made sense. They didn't have the ability to care for them. They'd be discarded. It was highly likely they wouldn't survive. So they give them to the only option available, who happens to be a guy running a sideshow. But what are the parents thinking during this? Are they like, oh, yeah, we'll just put our kid in a sideshow down on the boardwalk and hope for the best?
The parents were terribly conflicted. And, you know, if you can imagine the trauma of, first of all, having a child born this tiny at that time, you know, the fear and the terror and the grief that you would feel, and then you would be told your only chance of saving your child is to put it in a sideshow at Coney Island if people are going to pay admission. So I spoke to one woman, and she and her twin were born premature. And their mother's roommate in the hospital also had premature babies. And the doctor came in and said, you know, the only hope for these children is Coney Island. And the other mother said, I am not having my children be a freak show. They're not going to Coney Island. Her children died. The other mother said, you know, if that's what I have to do to save my children, then do it. You know, but some of the parents, that you know, they felt embarrassed. But they also felt grateful that this man was saving their children's lives. One woman told me Dr. Cooney actually came to the hospital to persuade her mother because her mother was carrying twins. One had already died. She was devastated. And she felt like, oh, if my other child is going to die too, I don't also want it to be a sideshow. You know, and Dr. Cooney had to come and persuade her, please let me save your child. She's still alive.
Don, I'm not sure if that's the same family that you are speaking about in the prologue, which I wanted to ask you about. It's a fascinating way to start your story. And it is a mother goes into labor early. She has twins, preemies. One dies immediately. And the doctor basically says, well, don't bury that one too quickly because you're going to have to bury the other one. But the father says, but she's alive. Oh, she's barely alive, says the doctor. And And that's kind of where you leave it, which is quite fascinating. It's a great hook to get us into the story. Is that who you're speaking of?
This is actually a different woman, but I met many, not many, but seven or eight, I would say, babies who were in Dr. Cooney's incubator who are alive now. So the woman in the introduction, she comes in again later. She meets Dr. Cooney at the World's Fair in 1939, and she shows up again toward the end of the book. I interviewed the baby when she was 95 years old. So here's a woman who was, her parents were told when she was born, you need to bury this one. There is no hope. We don't have anything at this hospital. We're not going to try. Nothing can be done. This father picks up a two-pound baby, puts her in a towel, hails a New York City taxi, and goes to Coney Island. You know, and she passed away when she was 96 years old.
Ugh, wonderful story. There's a part in the book where Dr. Cooney is going to hold sort of a reunion for all of these babies who have survived. And his goal is to sort of, well, establish a name for himself and also to prove to all these doctors and other people that he has wanted to impress over the years. And he brings them all back. I believe that's in about 1940. Is that right?
Well, he did it a couple of times. He did it in Chicago in 1934, and he did it again at the New York World's Fair. And he had smaller ones from time to time throughout his career. They were a couple of things. I mean, first of all, he was a showman, and they were great publicity. The public loved it. But also, he kept saying he was making propaganda for preemies. And by that, he meant he wanted the public to see that these children not only could be saved, but that they look like any other children you would see. They're going to grow up and they're going to lead full, productive lives. Because people were wondering, you know, they were called weaklings in the medical literature. You know, will these weaklings just be a drain on society, was the thinking at the time. So he was really trying to show both the public and the medical community, look, these are people who are in my incubators, and they look just like you and me.
Mm-hmm. Don, it's such a fascinating story. I understand how you got hooked on doing the research. And, you know, that first thing where you saw, whether it was a picture or a reference to incubators on a sideshow, and then as you peeled back the layers, you just found this amazing, fascinating story. But is that a departure for you in your curiosity, or is that what your writing and reading and researching often leads you to, or these kind of really fascinating stories that lie below the surface?
This was a complete and utter departure for me. My previous books were fiction and memoir. And I really had to sit down and say, okay, well, this time I'm going to have to dig in, and I'm going to have to go to all kinds of archives, and I'm going to have to pound the pavement, and I'm going to have to look at original documents that have been filed away somewhere for 60, 70, 80 years. It was really a fascinating thing for me to be able to do, to come, you know, to pull out this kind of history and to see how much of it is, you know, we live in an age where you think with a couple clicks of your mouse you can find anything because so much is available. But a lot of our history is not that readily available. It's still a kind of hidden away, and it really takes some footwork to dig it out.
Our guest, Dawn Raffel, is a journalist, memoirist, and a short story writer. She helped launch, the Oprah magazine. She's taught creative writing in the MFA program at Columbia and many more assignments around the world, it sounds like, in teaching summer literary seminars. Her new book is The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies. Dawn Raffel, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be on the show.
All right. Take care.